today.
Are you tired of living with stained and worn out carpeting? Does the den look like bears spent the winter with you? Spring is here, and so is Empire Today's half-off your project sales, starting now, but only for a limited time. Save 50% on a huge selection of carpet, hardwood, and laminate, standard padding and materials, and basic installation. Call the Empire Today half-off your project sale hotline now.
1-855-385-0681.
Empire Today's free in-home estimates are easy and smart. Choose from high-quality flooring in the rooms where you'll use them, with your lighting, so you can see the color best. We'll do the measuring. You do the selecting and saving. But first, you must do the calling. Everyone loves the half-off your project sale. Even bears. Call the Empire Today special hotline.
1-855-385-0681. 1-855-385-0681.
Empire
Today. Select styles. Details at EmpireToday.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening once again, and welcome to the PRF table. I'm one of your hosts, Brother Dunlap. Also sitting with me at the table tonight is the one and only Brother Warren Feaster and Sister Mary Barnett Williams, also known as Mama to those of you who have been listening before, and also our good friend, Reverend Curtis Bishop. So we'll bring those into the conversation in just a few moments, but we just wanted to let you know what we're going to be talking about tonight and what is going to be the direction for tonight's show here on the PRF table. If you've been with us for a while, you know that over the last 7 weeks, we really have been just dealing with a comprehensive analysis, of resources made available to members of different religious organizations. And myself, as a Christian minister, when I speak, I'm speaking from my context, but we are open to other viewpoints and other religions. As well, because when we talk about community, we don't live in a community that is just only with churches. We have synagogues, we have mosques, we have other type of religious organizations and ministries that are available. So we want to make sure we have a medium, so to speak, so that everybody has an opportunity to sit down at this table, the PRF table, and be able to talk about what's going on in their community and what's affecting them as members of various types of religious organizations. So tonight, my brothers and my sisters, what we're going to do is really just discuss the last couple of areas on the survey. And if you just tune in for the first time, I said that we've been talking about this for about 7 weeks. So if you go on to Blog Talk Radio, look up We Speak Radio, and you'll see all of the shows under the PRF table. But the first thing we're going to do tonight is just touch on community leaders. And last week, what we were talking about was question number 15 on the survey, and we were talking about the different types of people that are involved in addressing financial related needs to members of our particular religious organization. And the week before, we talked about ministers and ministerial leaders, religious leaders, laypersons. Last week, we hit on nonprofit organizations, and we wanted to touch on community leaders, but we just didn't get a chance to do that because the conversation was so rich just talking about nonprofits. And so tonight, one of the other things that we're going to do is we're really going to focus on the frequency of resources offered. And then at the end of the show, we're planning on going to close out this section of the PRF table and focus on practicality and effectiveness. And that's what I'm hoping is the bulk of our show tonight, talking about how practical are the resources that are offered to those of us as people or ministers or members of religious organizations. How effective are the type of resources? So with that, I just want to say welcome to all of the hosts that are with me on the show, because I don't count myself as just the host of the show. So we have Sister Williams. How are you doing this morning, this evening, excuse me?
I am doing just fine. How are you and everyone else at the table doing?
We are doing good. Reverend Bishop, Brother Bishop, how are you doing this evening, sir?
Oh, we're blessed. How about yourself? How are you guys doing tonight? It's a blessing to be here one more time.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And pulling up the rear, Brother Warren Feaster, Reverend, Master Sergeant, all those titles that he has.
All them titles. You know, I don't need all them titles, but I'm doing good. I'm doing good over here in this monsoon rainy season over here in the land of the morning calm. Glad to be here tonight because, you know, my schedule sometimes fluctuates and it's kind of sometimes a little difficult to get here.
Well, hey, brother, we're just happy that you, whenever you have an opportunity to sit down at the table, you already know there's a seat that says WF here at the PRF table, and we're going to make sure nobody sits in your chair. You don't know this, Brother Pizza, but last week Mama was kind of putting herself into your chair with the wee comments, and so I had to kind of bust her out just a little bit. And I said, Brother Pizza's going to kind of get a little bit upset with you taking over. Everything is about wee. I know I said it last week, those of you who are listening saying, what are these crazy people doing over there?
I think you got on me enough. I try to refrain from using that.
You know, there is a positive connotation to this thing of we. You know, we are trying to do this thing together here at the PRF table. We are trying to just let God allow us to be used as vessels to get messages from him across to the people, to help people become whole, to help people get healed of different things that's going on in their life. And I think that's one of the main reasons why God has allowed us to have this platform, that God has allowed us to be able to have so many of you sitting here at the table week after week, and the different and various people that come and bring upon the listenership comments and questions and suggestions and really just press us. So if you're listening and you want to join into the conversation at any time, press 1 on your dial pad or go to our Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances, and you'll see the link for tonight's show, and you'll be able to just chime in, and I promise you we'll read your question or comment on the air. So with that, let's get it. I really said earlier that I really don't want to focus too much tonight on community leaders, but I do want to just point out something from last week's show. One of the things that we talked about was there's a very varied amount of nonprofit organizations within all of our individual communities around our religious organizations, places where we go to worship, participate, fellowship with one another. And I think one of the points that was made was don't discount any organization inside of your community that is not parallel to your religious organization, right? So if you happen to be a somebody of the Catholic tradition, don't discount and think that only other Catholic organizations or churches in your community are the only ones that can help members within your own church. If you're Baptist, don't just look to the Baptist as another type of nonprofit organization as the only ones that can help members within your church. And I think we all are on the same sheet of music because we have places that we go to work. We have places that we go to school. We have places that we go to shop. We have places like we like to go and eat. And all of them are not like us when it comes to our religious beliefs, our theological beliefs, which really was speaking to the diversity that is out there. So we use all these other non-religious entities to make up the different things that we have going on in our lives. So when it comes to getting help, when it comes to resources, we shouldn't limit, and this is my point of view, we shouldn't limit the nonprofit organization in our own community that in most cases are doing some of the same work that we're doing as religious organization, and in some cases, Brother Bishop, some of the work that we should be doing as members of religious organizations. You know what I'm saying? So that's one of the points that I had. So I'm going to just open it up for about a couple of minutes, and I'll come to you, Brother Bishop, if you had anything that you wanted to recap on from last week, and Sister Mary, and then Brother Feaster, you can come right behind, even though you weren't on there from last week, if you had anything else to say before we get into talking about community leaders this week.
You know, first of all, I definitely have to concur on everything that you said thus far. And, you're absolutely right. I actually took some time out this week myself personally just to actually try and look down certain avenues to see what other resources that we definitely do have in the community as far as actually being able to be assistance to people in the community, not just necessarily people of the Baptist denomination or the Holiness or the Catholics or the Protestants, but as a whole. And I find it to be very interesting that there are absolutely a lot of resources that we need to tap into that we have not been tapping into.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sister Mary, what about you? Anything from last week before we dive straight into this?
Yes, I was just thinking of some things that we talked about last week and with statements that were made. And you made a statement about go to the well that's filled with water. And my question for me as I was going over this is, how can I go to the well if I don't know where the wells are located, you know? And so for me, because I had not asked previously about the resources in my church or even in my community, I did not know where the resources, you know, were. So that's why, you know, if I don't ask, then I don't know, you know what I'm saying? And even, and as you said, it should be someone in church that be able to help us, you know, or know where something is. And that I didn't even know that and still don't know that because I don't know who's doing what. You know, I don't know, like, the different professions and people that are in my church because I have not, you know, bothered to even ask. And so, again, we have to ask. You know, and we just have to do our research. And sometimes we just can't depend on other people because, you know, the majority of us do have a computer. You know what I'm saying? So we can get on the computer and find out things too. And then be wanting to share it with people. And then another a statement was made. You were talking about the pennies in the jar. And as I was thinking about the pennies in the jar, and I was saying that, you know, if I know that I'm on a really tight, you know, I maybe have maybe $30 left over in my check. So that means I put all my pennies in this jar. So since I know how my resources are, then I need to, you know, when I get so many pennies, I need to wrap them up and put them someplace safe and continue to wrap my pennies up. Because if something happens, like you were saying, and I'm thinking, oh, I have $100, but then, you know, the bill comes in and is due, then I find out, oh, my gosh, I only have $80. I thought I had $100. And so for me, that pins in the jar is that you need to know what you have, you know. So that was kind of interesting to me. And then you also was talking about, you know, we need to be open-minded. And you were talking about the lady that came to the church, as an example. Lady was coming to the church, and then she came there at 6 o'clock, you know. And to me, I'm feeling like that, you know, if I was in a personal position and when the lady would come to me, my mind should not be, my gosh, it's 6 o'clock, you know, I've never been late for church. Now what's this person want? You know what I mean? I'll tell her, well, you know, tell her after service, you know. My attitude should be, you know, I should create a comfort zone for this person. You know what I mean? I should go out there and introduce myself to her with a smile. You know, and then ask her name, you know, shake her hand, and then and tell her, say, would you please follow me and take her to a quiet place, not there in the hallway, and then ask her the question, you know, what can I do to assist you today? You know what I mean? Make her feel comfortable. You know, what can I do? Let me say, the question would be, how can I assist you? What can I assist you with today? You know, make her feel comfortable, important. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't know what she's been through. It doesn't matter that she just came. The situation is that I'm in this particular position, and because I have this position, I'm also accountable for this. You know what I'm saying? And the person may not know anything about God. You know, and right now because I'm being kind and nice to her, because this is the face that she sees. These are the words that I'm speaking to her. You know. And, you know, they say first impression, last impression, that even, I mean, her home could be in foreclosure for maybe $50,000, and I may not be able to help it at all. But let her know that when she leaves there, she'll feel like, you know something? Okay, she doesn't have that money. You know, the church can't help me with that. But you know something? I know if she had it, she would. And that's the kind of comfort zone that if we're in leadership over these different offices, the person should feel comfortable. So I just believe in, you know, having creating a comfort zone for people.
Amen, amen. You know, one of the things that I wanted to touch on tonight and maybe just hear some of your thoughts was community leaders. You know, what is your definition of a community leader? And the reason I'm asking that question is not a question on the survey, but I think it's important to have a good understanding of who we consider to be our community leaders. I can speak about my community. Our community, my brother, is so divided in so many different ways, and I'm not trying to go there and let that be the focus of the conversation, but our community is divided into so many different ways based upon religion, based upon denomination, based upon race, based upon color, based upon economic status, based upon what side of the city you live on, based upon living in the city versus living in the country. And if I have those barriers up, and this is kind of like a prelude to where we're going to go on the first Thursday of next month, but if I have all of those different type of barriers up, or we have those type of barriers within our religious organization, it prohibits individuals from getting the assistance that is actually needed. So I throw this question out to you and anybody else who's listening. You know, who do you consider to be your community leaders and why?
Well, I myself,
well, if y'all would permit, I'll go ahead and jump in on this first piece.
Go ahead.
I hate this lag because it always happens like that. But I think this is a very great and appropriate first question, because I know for a while there we was dealing with some subjects, and until we actually broke down and got the definition that we at the table were working with, we really was, you know, we was bouncing around and we was muddying up the waters. But when we decided to say, hey, what's the definition that we're using? You know, how can we come to a table of understanding if we're all coming with different definitions and then we're all tackling it from different angles, you know? And so it adds to the confusion as opposed to helping fix the problem. So when we start talking about community leaders, and you know, I always bear off a little bit, so bear with me as I bear off a little bit, but the community leaders have changed over the years. We knew who the community leaders were. Whenever they came around, you know, they got the respect. So you had them. We didn't have a mayor. I forgot what they called the guy that ran the little city. A councilman, I don't know what he was called, but I remember his name and I remember his face. And then, you know, in my community, we had three churches. And those pastors were community leaders. And then there was a business that was there in that community. And the owner of that business, it was the water company, the owner of that business was considered a leader in the community. So in my community, when those people came around, they represented to me what a leader was. You know, now when I think about a leader in the community today, being that I've been in the military for so long, and I'm really, my community right now is the military. So for me, a lot of my community leaders are based on rank. They're based on the structure that the Army has set up. When I get into different cities and towns where I live for a short period of time, it could be partly me and also a shared responsibility of the community leaders. But when I go and move in these different cities, different states, different towns, I don't know who the leaders are in that area. And nobody comes around and shakes my hand. Nobody comes around and tells themselves. Until it's time for an election, I have no idea about any of the leaders in that particular area. So for me, being in the military, my leaders are based strictly, mostly, not strictly, but mostly on rank and position. So I like this first question because, you know, the community when I was growing up is different than the community of today. The community when I was growing up, where I grew up at, everybody knew everybody. But now when we go into these different places where we live, you know, it's not the same. So now our communities are spread out, and we've branched on to work communities. We branched on to social communities. We branched on to organizational communities, maybe a different fraternity or sorority or a different group that we're a part of, that community. So, yeah, I'm dwelling off, so I'm going to stop right there. But that's what I see going on with community leaders. Over the years, they've changed.
So agree. Mama, I think you wanted to jump in there, so just go ahead and jump on right in.
No, I was just agreeing with him because, of course, I'm from the old school, too, and we knew. But to now, I like he says, no one's come around to, you know, when I came here, moved here, no one, you know, welcomed me to the city, welcomed me here. It was not anything, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know who my community leaders are. Because there are the fraternities and, you know, I mean the sororities, and there are different social groups and things of that nature. But you don't know anything until it's time to vote or you read on the Internet, you know, because now they're not even passing that information out. So if you want to know about who's running and those information, now you'll have to go on the Internet and look for it, you know. You hear what you hear on the news, and that's it. So you really just don't know, you know. So I don't really know who my leaders, my community leaders are, you know. So the only leader I can say. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish your statement.
No, you go ahead.
One of the things that I think you've done was you've identified the community leaders. I think it's important to be able to identify what a community leader looks like to you because you may not know the names of those individuals. Some of us don't know the names of everybody who's in a community organization or we may not know that. But remember the context of what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about community leaders being resources to us as members of religious organizations. And oftentimes, Brother Bishop, you're going to jump in after this brief statement, I guess, but oftentimes we have community leaders right there in our midst, in our churches. I know one church that has a community leader. This individual is a judge in the city. I know some other churches that have, one community leader is a owner of a barbershop. You know, so there's individuals that are there that we may not look at them as community leaders because we may not be involved in that community aspect, but I think it's worth getting to know and understand who those individuals are. But the thing that I don't think that you need to do, none of us, I don't think I need to go out and seek out who my community leaders are. That information should be already out there. I remember last week Chital was talking about advertising is the key. So as members of the religious organization, members of a church, if somebody is new coming into my church, just like what we were talking about last week, you know, it should be out there, the type of resources that's out there. Well, there should be some information out there, in my opinion, that speaks to who the community leaders are. The thing that I have to say, the thing that I think hinders, which, again, goes back to this notion of barriers, which we'll discuss, is only wanting to acknowledge the community leaders that are like us or with our agenda or with our own religious particular affiliation. That's damaging. But, Bro Bishop, did you have anything? That's just my thought process on it. So,
well, I have to agree with you. I really have to agree with you, Brother Dunlap, because to me it's that old saying, cliche or scenario, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. Yeah, are you putting all your eggs in one basket rather than actually spreading the eggs abroad and saying, okay, I know what we have here. What do you guys have over there? You know, and you made a statement of saying that it's not, you feel that it's not our job to go out and seek who our community leaders are, that they should have themselves, that they should be transparent, that we should be able, that they should not actually bring themselves to where we are or make themselves known, or there should be something in place that we know who these people are and the resources that they hold, or the resources that they have available to not only them but to us as well.
Right.
I agree with you there. The only thing is putting that process into action. You know, it's one of those. It's easy to say the car will run, but if you don't turn the key, it won't run. So
that's right.
That needs to be a process, or that needs to be a way that we are made aware of who these people are. You know, and I think we keyed on that last week when you said that, when the young lady started talking about advertising and letting it be known that in our midst, or, you know, here at our church here and at the churches over there and at the next church, there's what I've seen over the years is that we, and it's like you said, we pick and choose who we want to fellowship with. So thus, we eliminate a whole bunch of other people by creating this circle of fellowship, rather than having a broad spectrum. We create a circle, and in doing so, we cut off a lot of resources that we have.
I think Brother Feaster wanted to jump in, and that's one of the things we don't want to do. We don't want to cut off the resources that's actually there. So, Brother Feaster, go ahead and jump on right on in.
Yes, I got a simple question. I don't even know if I can formulate it into a question, but I remember a while back when Adia was on, I can't even remember what the subject was, and she was talking about how we need to go out and just find information because the information is readily available. And JR, if I remember correctly, you came out and said, well, what if we don't even know how to get that information? And I'm going to use myself as an example. When I was growing up, finding out who my community leaders are was easy because they made themselves known by handshake. They would come out. Hold on, there's a train going. Let me close my window. They would come out and they would make themselves known. But now with social media and with the internet so prevalent, a lot of the leaders are trying to tackle more of the young people than people of our generation, and they're going to social media. So I guess my question is on the sense of, is it that we don't know where the resources are? Is it that we're still conformed to our ways? Or is it that we're still looking for the way that we grew up and not changing with the times? Because I really believe that the resources are out there. They're there. Knowing who our community leaders are, you know, they're there. It's just that, like me, matter of fact, when I was home one time on leave and at my house and got a knock on the door, and the guy was running for city council. And I still have his flyer that he handed out. And when I went to the polls, that was the only person I knew. And I voted for him. I mean, I got online and looked at everything else. But based on the fact that he came out, knocked on my door, told me who he was, shook my hand, he had his, I think it was his daughter with him, that's how he connected with me. But society and time has changed. So my question is, when we're going out looking for these community leaders, are we still looking for them in the way that we grew up and taught? I guess this is kind of like my question. And I'm hopefully y'all caught it, because I don't think I quite formulated it into a question.
I think what you're saying is, and I hope I'm correct in and assuming that you're saying that We're so accustomed to people coming to talk to us, and if they don't come and talk to us, then we don't feel the need to actually look for them. And I can relate to what you're saying, because I can recall years ago when the when the councilmen or the political people that were running for office will actually take the time to come to your house and sit down and talk with you and let you know what their platform were, let you know what their agenda were, what they were trying to accomplish. And today's society, because of, you see a whole lot of television commercials, billboards, internet commercials, you don't actually get a chance to do it, have a one-on-one with that individual. It's more or less so you're listening to a pre-recorded message that they left or that they made, and then they're saying, well, I need you to vote for me. So it's one of those things to where you're not really getting a feel for that person. I think that's what you're trying to say, Brother Warren. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that's the direction that he, I just saw a message from him. That's the direction that he was actually taking us into, and I think that's right. And that brings me to a, you know, I love this show because, you know, God gives us a couple of thoughts or questions, and it just blossoms. And I think that's just the way dialogue is supposed to happen. What I heard from that, it brings this question to me. Therefore, are our community leaders, or let me say it like this, are our political leaders the same as or a type of community leader? You know, I think breaking down that part of it, because I heard y'all both talking about political leaders, and I need to be willing to be honest with myself and say that there's either a distinction between a difference between a political leader and a community leader, or the political leader is a part of or a type of community leader, and put them in the same boat. Because in the reality of it is, when we're talking about resources being made available to members of our church, political leader doesn't try to make promises to people of our church, of my church. They're trying to make promises to the people of the community, and the church is for people of the community. Because they're not going to polarize themselves. Most political candidates are not going to polarize themselves to one specific religious group.
Exactly.
With fear of ostracizing themselves and others, you know, themselves meaning from the vote of somebody else who is not of the same religion. So that's why you hear those different messages that keep coming across when it comes to different political campaigns and times of voting and registering, things of that nature, because they're trying to deal with all of the groups, not just one or two groups. And to be honest with you, it depends on who's going to have the most influence for helping them to get elected. So I think this is like, oh my goodness, you know, we have to be careful about who we identify as our community leaders, as well as who we identify as the political leaders that's going to help provide resources to those of us in our particular religious organizations, and making sure that we're not getting duped.
Right.
Making sure that promises are not being made that we're falling for that we know they're not going to be able to keep.
Right.
Nobody can come into our church and say, I'm going to clean up Philadelphia, I'm going to clean up North Philly. How are you going to do that? Brother Feast, I like how Brother Feast said, look, we start off with one question, but we have to go on to others. Because if I just take you going to clean up the streets of North Philly, and then when you get into office, or I get into office, or whoever it is, and that doesn't happen, it doesn't happen fast enough, the money is not there, whatever the case may be, some other things pop up in our community that need, that has the more of the attention of the public eye, then we're there sitting up there with our mouth stuck out. And now we start to reduce the fact that this person is no longer a community leader, but in fact they still are. Reducing the fact that they're not, you know, a good political leader. Yes, they still are. They just can't attend to our specific needs, which goes back to the survey. It's not all about that one individual. It's about who are all these individuals that are able to be out there to help us as members of religious organizations, because some of our needs as members of religious organizations are a little bit different than those that are not within our religious organizations. So any more quick comments on that before we just go to the last couple pieces of the survey that deal with the frequency of resources that's made available.
Yeah, I got. Let me. I want to say something on what you just said.
Good.
I was listening to what you were saying, and I think there is a big distinction between community leaders and political leaders. Because when you gave your first comment, you was talking about your very first comment when we started talking about the subject. You mentioned barbershops, and I don't know about other races and other communities, but I know in the Black community, barbershops and beauty salons are a point of information. So until you said that, I didn't even think about the barbershop, the barber, and the beautician being a community leader. My wife has had the same beautician for over 10 years. My son has had the same barber pretty much his whole – he only know one barber pretty much his whole life. And every time that my wife comes back from the beauty salon, she talks about – she tells me about some of the things that's going on within the community. Because that beautician and that bar, and even when I go home and take my son to the barber is telling me things about, you know, what's going on in the community. And all they're doing is spending 8 hours a day standing up on somebody's head. But everybody else that comes in is giving them a piece of this pie and a piece of this puzzle. So you got one person that is never, I've never seen a barber, I've never seen a beautician run for any city official, but yet they have more influence in our community than probably any pastor, any church, any councilman, any deacon, any librarian, because everybody comes to them. You already got to feel warm. You already got to feel comfortable for them for you to be there, and you're sitting there for men about 15 to 20 minutes. For women, well, you know, however long it takes for them to get their hair done. And all this information is being shared. So there are even the unsung community leaders. And then when we start talking about political leaders, it's a totally different platform. You alluded to the reason why they're going into office. And then when they get into office, some of the issues that may arise, they have to draw their attention to. You know, I see this thing being a lot broader than what I initially came into. So, but yeah, I believe that there is a difference between political leaders and community leaders.
Wow, that's deep there, Brother Warren. Because I'm sitting here, I'm listening to you, and I'm saying to myself, man, this is awesome because the community leaders actually play and have a bigger impact on our lives than the political leaders do, because of the fact, like you said, the barbershop and the beauty salon is a wealth of information there. You know, because I know when I go to the barbershop, I'm usually there 3, 4, 5 hours, and it's not just to get a haircut, but you find out a lot of what's going on in the community there. So what you just said, that was very deep, because I was thinking, When the political people come around to the church, they're not coming there looking at us as Christians. They're coming looking at us as a potential vote. When you go to the barbershop or the beauty salon, it's a whole different platform. You find out everything that's going on from a religious standpoint to a criminal aspect. There's everything is just about covered in that barbershop. Versus that political leader coming in there saying, I need your vote. It doesn't even matter to them what your beliefs are. They simply want your vote.
I can't orchestrate a show like this, I promise you. I just could never do it. You know what? This is so amazing because I remember a couple of years ago, when I was in seminary, one of the things that it was in an ethics course, and I had to do a presentation. And all throughout my seminary career, all throughout my college education, I always wrote on and presented things that was applicable to my community. So I never had to go out and try to make something up. I looked at what was going around me, and I focused on that, and I had to write a paper. I wrote about that. We had a situation in and not the community where my where I physically live, but here's my thought process. If there is one area of the city that is dilapidated, that the houses are ran down, that doesn't get adequate resources from the government, city government, county government, whatever, then our whole city is not whole. Because we have a section, we have people in a different section of the city that are still, everybody's called a citizen of that city. So if one section of the city is not doing well, the whole city is not doing well, no matter how well it may look to the outside eye. And there was, I'll make this real brief. There came a businessman that was trying to put a landfill. And you know what a landfill is.
Right.
A landfill where they dump things, bricks, waste, more than garbage, including garbage. And they were trying to put this on the south side of the city, right? Not on the north side where the houses are, you know, $400,000. They put it on the south side, you know. And I got to be honest with you, you know, there are more black people on the south side of the city in that community than it is non-black people. Now, for what it's worth, a barbershop, a community leader, stood up and said, we're not having that. So this person who owns the barbershop created an organization. I won't call the name right now until I give them on a show, but created an organization to deal with economic issues because it was about economics. The business owner was going to make a lot of money, but at what cost to the people? So there was press conferences. He got the news media down there to the barbershop. Only a few religious leaders actually stood up and joined in with that, but that's a whole other show. But at the end of the day, the landfill was defeated. People went to the city council and all of that. Here's my point. This wasn't just something that affected the community outside of the four walls of the church. There was people in various churches that was going to be affected. May not have been 50% of your congregation, but you still had some people that lived on that side of town that was going to be affected by it. So you need community leaders. We need community leaders to be a part of something that sometimes, as you said, Brother Bishop, sometimes they are more influential on the things that affect us as members of our religious organization. And that resource, those resources of gathering folk and getting folk together to stand up for what was right so that it wouldn't hurt and harm the health of individuals and bring down their prices, the value of their homes because you got all this nastiness around your house. Come on, man. So all this is just coming up, y'all, so we can understand that it's not just us as ministers, Brother Bishop, Brother Feaster. We're just not the only ones. And if I had to give a scripture to anybody, go to Exodus 18. Perfect example of it's not just us as the ministers, as the pastors, as the preachers that are going to help us inside of our religious organization. It's going to take a whole bunch more people. Can you imagine people getting sick after a period of time? Developing cancer after a period of time, children being sick after a period of time, you know who's going to have to still deal with that if those things would have happened? The minister, the people inside of the four walls of the church, because now we talk about such and such has cancer, we need you to pray. Now you talk about such and such has this particular illness, we need you to go to the hospital and visit. So the thing is, God has created us to be a proactive people, not a reactive people. In this survey, I think we're closing it out, but this survey is designed for us to start thinking about some of these things, thinking about who are the people that are involved in addressing these financial-related needs. Now, everything I just talked about had nothing to do with a dollar sign, that situation of the landfill, but it does have everything to do with economics. So it's not about not having money and needing people from the outside, community leaders and nonprofit organizations helping to bring us and give us money inside of the church. But it's about looking at it from the bigger perspective, the bigger picture. And I know and understand, y'all, that everybody's not going to have the big picture perspective like I do or that I try to have. But sometimes we need to ride the coattail of the people that's able to see things that we're not able to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Well,
Mama, do you have anything? I mean, we've been just going and going and going. So, Mama, you know, we're not trying to leave you out. Jump on in there if you got something or.
Oh, well, what's coming to my mind is that, what's coming to my mind is that, you know, we have to want, we all have to want improvement in our communities. And had not that businessman could say, you know, I got my business and people going to come here and this is the way it is. And he has, you were saying, Brother Feaster, the barber shop's down there. Known the barber for 10 years. I know he's going to do a good job. Okay, he's not going to be there that long, so it'll be okay for him to be there. No, the barbershop owner didn't have that attitude. He was thinking about the whole community, and he was just saying, this is just not right. This is not right, and somebody needs to do something about it. And he chose to do something about it. You know what I mean? And that's what you call a community leader.
Right.
You know,
that's
that's a community leader. Because why? He is in a community. He's a business owner. A business owner is a business owner. But he chose to be a community leader because he wanted to help his community. And all these things that you said before about, you know, depreciation of the land, you know what I'm saying? The sickness and diseases that come from the garbage and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just would be in disease infested, not to say the roaches, the rats, and everything else that would come along with it. So, yes, that's what you call a community leader. And, you know, any of us can be a community leader if we choose to.
I am
because
so glad.
Because things happening in all of our neighborhoods. But we just don't have the confidence, I think. Well, I know about this we word, but, you know, I don't have the confidence I need to do it. I'll put it that way. And so it's a lot of eyes don't have the confidence to do it. I feel like, what difference would it make? You know, what difference does it make? You know, they have the money. We don't have the money. You know, they do what they want to do. So when people have that attitude, well, they do what they want to do anyway because they got the money. You know, this is a businessman. You know what I mean? He's a billionaire, got all this property and whatnot. So what's the point? But his attitude was, there is a point. There is a point. I do not want this in our community. So it was him deciding he didn't want it in his community, and then he made it our community. That's all I got to say.
Go ahead, Brother Feaster. Jump on in, sir.
I was listening to the story about the barber shop, the barber that was that stood up and the change happened and it didn't, the landfill didn't come to that community. And as we're dialoguing this, I'm noticing that as we're talking about community leaders, we're talking about, and I'm going to say this phrase, and I don't mean it in this extent, but so we can understand, we're talking about no-name leaders. Who would have considered a barber or a beautician or someone in one of those type positions where we don't see them as a leader to be a leader? I am convinced that this barber was able to cause such a change, not based on his name, not even based on him standing up, but based on his position in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about, in the book of Genesis, Joseph, and I'm trying to remember the story as I'm talking, but the part that I was thinking about when Joseph went to Pharaoh, and the Bible says, and Joseph blessed Pharaoh. And the thing that, if you understand a little bit of the history and the culture right there, what you have is you have a shepherd going into the palace to see the king and blessing the king. What you have is someone considered of very low esteem. You know, shepherds were nasty. They were dirty. They were smelly. They were always outside. They smelled like the animals that they shepherd. But yet here he is, one of the lowliest of men in the community, going into the highest of person in this community and blessing him. And so what that barber got me to thinking about that, because he stood up, and based on his position, more so than his name, and granted, I don't know the man, and he may have a prominent name, but I believe it's more so on his position, him being a barber, him being, you know, because people that work in the bar, what they call them, I can't think what they call them, bartenders, even bartenders are esteemed high in the community. And guess what everybody's doing to barber, beauticians, and bartenders? They're coming in at the end of the day, some part of the day, and they're just a day, or guess what I saw on the news, and this and that, and this and that. And majority of the time, they sit there and they listen. That's a free counseling session that we get that we don't even pay attention to. So those people right there, we hold high esteem to based on their position. Those same people can live a crazy lifestyle. Now, we'll take the president, we'll take the mayor, we'll take the city councilman, and as soon as they do something wrong, we want to crucify them. But if our barber do something wrong, if our beautician do something wrong, if even the bartender do something wrong, we don't crucify them. We don't crucify them. We hold them of different esteem and of different pedestal, you know. So it's just showing me how we're not talking about prominent names when we're talking about community leaders. We got away from the mayors. We got away from the councilmen. We got to those people that give us their ear, those people that we invest our time and our lives into, those people that when we go there, we touch people from all over that community. When I go into the barber to take my son, you know, and I talk to him, I'm catching up from the last time I saw him, and we're touching bases, and then everybody else that's in there gets a part of the conversation, and now I met this brother, and now I met this person, and now I know what's going on in his community and in his life and things that are going on. And it's just interesting to me that, you know, we're looking at, like I said, we're looking at the shepherd as opposed to the Pharaoh as we're talking about our community leaders.
Wow, that's some powerful stuff. You know, the point that I see in that is, let's not, if I had to make a point of that, Brother Feaster, would be, let's not devalue anyone that God can or chooses to use to help assist us as members of our religious organizations.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. let's not, and I think I'm making a note of it. Devaluing people, to me, is a barrier. If the Lord can use a donkey, dot, 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 and we can move on. So let's take the last few minutes of tonight's show, and evidently we're not going to really get to practicality and effectiveness, so I think that's what we're going to start off next week's show. But there's two other questions that are on the section of the survey that deals with availability of resources. And the first one is question number 17, and it says, how frequent are the resources made available to members of your religious organization? And I really want us to just think about that question, and the choices that we have on the survey is daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually, in a crisis, and don't know. And think about that question in context of all the other questions. You know, this is one of the last few questions on the survey, so we already answered the question about what are the type of resources that's made available. People had an opportunity to select those, what type of people are available to address it. You had opportunity to answer that question. Do you know who to contact for the resources? What are the different types of formats of the resources that are made available? But in this particular question, how frequent are the resources? I think that's very, very important when we deal with availability, because as you'll see when I bring some of the results back next week, if I'm saying, if we as members of the religious organization, let's say 50 of us filled out this survey from my church, and the results show that we as the members are saying resources are available annually, or resources are made available annually and in a crisis. Those are the top two choices that have been selected by those of us who completed this survey. But here is the religious leaders, because that's another survey, the religious leaders are answering that same question, saying we offer this weekly and monthly and quarterly. Therein now you have a problem, because we have the leaders and the members on two different sheets of music. So what I'm trying to get at is I'm trying to analyze, or I'm going to be analyzing, what are the religious leaders saying about the availability and what are the members saying. And I can tell you, just as a preliminary, there has been a lot of I don't knows in a crisis to response to that particular question. That says a lot. Now, here's the thing. What is the religious leader saying? Do they feel that they're offering resources pretty much just in a crisis? But if I, as a religious leader myself, and if I had the responsibility of being the one to make sure that the resources are there, I would kind of probably feel bad if my members would say, I don't know when the resources are available, or only in a crisis. If it's in a crisis, isn't that being reactive? It's being reactive. And not saying we should not address needs in a reactive mode, because you can't predict everything that's about to happen. But we should have, the goal is we want to have to see if the members then and the leaders can get together on the same sheet of music, Brother Bishop, to be able to, so that everybody knows, right? We want to be able to have our religious organizations to where if I survey 20 people in our church, most of the people in that church will say, hey, this particular resource, whatever it is offered every week. And the leader is saying the same thing. That shows that we have some unity. We're not talking about the effects of the resource. We're not talking about the practicality of it. But at least we're on the same sheet of music in that particular context. And then we can move to how effective it is and how practical it is. The other one, and then I'll let y'all go ahead and talk if you like. The other question is, when are the resources offered? The selections that we have for that is they're offered in the morning. They're offered in the afternoon. They're offered in the evening. They're offered on the weekends. They're offered on weekdays, or all of the above. Same thought process, right? If I'm thinking that they're only offered on the weekends, and you as my religious leader are saying that you're offering this thing, you know, on the weekdays and the morning and afternoon, there's a breakdown. Somebody doesn't have the right information. So if I think that the resources are only available in the morning times, but I work every day from 8 to 5, what's the likelihood of me trying to come to the church to get the resources? How many people can afford to just take off work to try to get some financially related resources? How many people are working in jobs that are they're being underpaid for? How many people are doing that that's working hourly rate jobs, that's going to take off of work to go and try to find another job? I'm done, y'all. What's your thoughts on these two final questions of this section of the survey?
Okay. Well, in my church, I've been at my church for, I'll say, 3 years, and this has never come up. Never. It's never come up. I've never heard it discussed. Never heard people talking about it, you know, nothing. Now, when there is a crisis, we all participate. But other than that, that's the only thing that I have heard. When it's a crisis, we all participate. You know, those of us who choose to participate to assist. But other than that, all of this is never discussed. And the reason why I know what I know is because, you know, when we had our business meeting, it was discussed. And then I asked questions. But if I had not been at the business meeting, I wouldn't have not have known.
Well, what I would say is go back to the question. The question is, how frequent are the resources made available? That's the focal point of that question, that they're made available. That's a starting point. That's the starting point, that they're made available. See, sometimes there's information put out in business meetings, and people don't get it because they don't bring their tail to a business meeting.
That's true.
There's information being put out in a church announcement, but somebody didn't get it because they ain't come to church. They ain't feel like getting up this morning. I can go on and on. So it may not be that it's not made available. It may be that I wasn't in the place to get the information, and or the information was not made available outside of that one particular venue. It is nothing worse than information coming out in a church business meeting or a conference, and then the information has to come out through word of mouth. Because all of us know, if I give one question to you, by the time it gets to the 15th person down the line, that thing has already been taken out of context. Mm-hmm. That's been proven over and over and over in training sessions, in seminars. So we want it to be where it's stated, so we don't have to worry about miscommunication at all. So anybody else?
May I speak a moment? Just real quick.
Go ahead.
Okay, for me, my understanding is that if I have a problem or a need, I just call up my pastor and let him know. That's it. That's how it goes. If I have a need, I can just call him up, and then he'll take it, and then it'll go before the board, and that's it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about that before, that. That may work up until a point. Again, go back to Exodus 18. Moses was real successful at letting people stand in line day and night until he got wore out and he was able to be seen physically looking wore out. And his father-in-law came in and said, "You're wearing yourself out and the people too."
Mm-hmm.
That's never going to – you can only take one phone call at a time, mama.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know.
You only can take one phone call at a time. You can only go to one person's house at a time. So there needs to be some spreading it out sometimes, because that person can only do but one thing at a time. And here's where I know for a fact. Contention comes, or discord comes within the body, is when the pastor does for you but can't get around to doing for the next person. What makes Sister Mama so special?
Mm-hmm. But that's not saying that it's going to be approved, because it has to also be approved by the board. So he doesn't have the choice to make it. Like if it's maybe $25 or $30, he can do that. But other than that, you know, anything large has to go before the board. So he doesn't, he's limited too into, he can just say okay.
Wow, you know, I could really.
No.
You don't have the time.
I'm with you. I hear you. I'm not faulting your organizational structure. Hold on, brother. I'm not faulting your organizational structure. I'm just saying that just ain't biblical. That's all I'm saying. It's not a biblical way of addressing needs. It's a religious way of addressing needs, and it may be working. But think about how long you've been there. So evidently, it's not working that good. Because a lot of what we've been talking about over these last several weeks is information that probably should have already been known. But, again, the religious nature, the church nature of it, shows that there's a breakdown. Because if you can only give $35 without going to a board, what happens if I only need
$37?
You got to go to the board for the other $2?
I know. And I just threw that number out there because he was just saying he could – he's only allowed a small portion of when it comes to money. So I'm assuming it can't be any more than about maybe $75 or $100 at the most.
I hate to be in need of $101. I had to wait for it to go to a board to get some help. I'm just saying, that's just me. Go ahead.
I know.
Bishop, you still with us?
I'm still here, Doc. I'm just shaking my head. I'm shaking my head. I can't even say anything. I'm just shaking my head. All I can say is with a man left, I concur. I agree with you. You know, I think I made this point on last week. It would be a crying shame that because something has to go from this hand to this hand to this hand to this hand, because we don't know of other resources out there. Because if you got to wait, because like I said on last week, a lot of churches in this area, with the exception of maybe 20 or 30 of them, probably have services once a month, maybe twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to wait 30 days for a board to meet. Okay. And I'm just going to stop right there.
So, you know, it's funny. And, you know, we make humor of it, and, you know, we make light of it sometimes here on the PR table because, you know, there's people that are in bondage behind some things. There's people that are held up. There's people that refuse to go sometimes to their particular religious organization, you know, for different amount of reasons. Again, we're going to talk about these barriers. So maybe one of the things that I need to do when I revise the survey the next time is to put daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually in a crisis, don't know, or when the board says so.
When the board says so.
Never.
When the board
says so.
Never.
That's when you can get the resource.
My Lord.
But in all seriousness, y'all, you know, these are some of the things that need to be talked about. You know, let me use this metaphor, the metaphor of a mirror. You know, if we put up a mirror to the things that we do in our religious organizations, the things that are being offered to us in our religious organization, what will we see in that mirror? And that's the segue into next week's show. Will we see if the resources that are made available to us as members of religious organizations are practical? Would we see if the resources that are being made available are effective? And I'm going to go ahead and just read a couple of things, and maybe we'll just end like that for tonight if nobody else has any comments. But I looked in the Bible because, you know, I have to come from that perspective as well. I did not find the word practical or practicality nowhere in the Bible. I didn't find the word effective or effectiveness nowhere in the Bible. So that's just what God gave me as part of, let's evaluate what's going on, how we're doing things. When I looked up the word practical, it means of or relating to or governed by or acquired through practice or action rather than theory, speculation, or ideas. Something that is practical is concerned with the production or operation of something useful. So practicality, because that's the word that I used on the survey, is the quality or the state of being practical. So it is a state of being practical. It says the aspects of a situation that involved actually doing or experiencing something rather than theories or ideas. That just blew me away. So when we start looking at the type of resources that's out there, and we have all of these things, I can speak from my ministry perspective. We have all these different type of ministries out there, Brother Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
You could have 1,500 ministries, but are they practical? Are they practical for the people who they're supposed to be ministering to? Think about the question of the frequency. How can I say that the resources are practical if it's only offered on a Monday morning when you know 95% of the members in your congregation are working on Monday morning?
True. Mm-hmm. Practical.
So, hey, I think we have a very good segue for next week. And let's just think about, you know, practicality and effectiveness and And what I want us to really look at is, how would, here's the questions, how would you rate the effectiveness of the resources offered? See, in being able to answer that question, you have to look at all the answers and the other responses that you've given to all the other questions on the survey. So now here comes that mirror when we start talking about practicality and effectiveness. It's easy to say, oh, yeah, my church, they offer to me as a member of the church, they offer financial literature. They offer, they're always talking about the PRF table as a social media type of resource. And they have teachers that are there. That we do this in Sunday school, and we do it on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. But when you start thinking about how effective it is, you have to take all of that into account. And the last question is, how practical are the resources that are offered? So one is about effectiveness, and the other one is about practical. Do you know how practical they are? Have you even thought about how practical they are, or are we just happy that they're actually being offered? Remember my metaphor about the pennies in the jar, as Mama talked about tonight. Is it practical? Is it practical for me to have a whole jar of coins that only has $20 worth of coins in it when I need $25 to fill up my gas tank? It's not practical. It's not practical if they're in a jar and I have no way to roll them up and give them to somebody. Because who's going to take a big old jar of pennies if you're going through? If you ride down the street and you need some gas, you need to give it to a tow truck.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Bishop, any closing comments? Mama, we'd come to you. Brother Feaster, you can be next if you're still with us. Brother Bishop, anything? Hey.
I don't have anything. I'm just thinking that you're back here. I cannot wait till next week.
Oh, bless you, my brother. Mama, anything that you wanted to bring before the people today?
Well, I'm thinking about when you were saying about the whole, thinking of the whole survey, and most of mine was, I don't know. It's like, and what I do know, and you're saying about weighing it, how do I, you know, I'm going to have to think about this. How do I, how effective is that? Because I don't know what kind of need I'm going to have. You know, but because I do know that about the other ministry, you know, Unslow, you know, community, now I know that I have that ministry also. So now, but then with that ministry, I have to be below the poverty level, 200%, they say. So now I'm wondering about the effectiveness will be zero there for me because I don't meet their guidelines. And so now the only resource that I have, you know, so to speak, is the church, and then that's going to depend on what it is, and then it has to go before the board, and then I definitely have to pray. And so I'm just like, okay, you know, I need favor here, Lord. I mean, I'm just keeping it real.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I don't have to pray.
Hold some of it, Mama, until next week. Don't try to figure it all out. Just meditate on that for next week. Brother Peter, go ahead, my brother.
Yes, I just want to make a short comment. But when we start talking about how the churches have set up disposition of information and availability of resources, let's be mindful of there are a lot of people that have come into churches, sung a sad song, and it's not been for the good. They've been using the church. And the story I was thinking about was the story of the fig tree when the servant walked up to the keeper and said, this tree has been bad for 3 years. Let's cut it down. It's producing no fruit. And the keeper said, no, that's one more year. Let's fertilize it. Let's cultivate it. And then if there's nothing in that year, then we'll cut it down. And what I thought about in that was a lot of times, and JR used to say this all the time, you have to have the courage to care. A lot of times what happens is these people are coming for these resources, and all we're doing is not feeding the need in the womb. And so when we talk about this the availability of resources, a lot of times we've caused that problem. So based on based on what you're saying, J.R., about we have to do this biblically, we need to go back and look at our policies, look at our procedures, look at our things that we have in place and find out, is it biblical or did we do this based on what was going on at the time? And so I don't know if that tied into where we're going or what we were talking about, but I just started thinking about that as you were doing your final comments, J.R. Thank you for the opportunity to sit at the table. It's been a blessing, and I love this, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you, my brother. Now go ahead and get to work so you don't get fired. Well, for all of us here at the PRS table, we just say thank you for just taking the time out of your schedule to just sit down with us, and we hope that you will join us once again next week, Thursday, July 31st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're really going to start talking about practicality and effectiveness, and what I'm also going to do is actually have some live results of the various surveys that have been taken over about the last month and a half, so stay tuned. It's going to be a very interesting conversation, but more especially a very interesting dialogue. So until then, we see you next week. God bless you, Brother Bishop, Mama, Brother Feast, and everybody else who's listening. Y'all have a wonderful, wonderful evening. God bless.
Okay, good night, everybody. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.